Welcome to Land Academy. This is the Cash Flow from Land Show, where we show you how to buy unwanted vacant land and sell it for more on the internet. I'm Steve Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We are your hosts. With over 15,000 completed transactions, we are the experts in this niche land flipping business.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com. All right, let's get this show started.
Steve Butella here for Land Academy. Welcome to our Cash Flow from Land show. In this eight-part series, Jill and I talk about what to do when sellers begin to start calling you back based on the offers that you sent them in the mail to buy their property. It's stuff that she and I do all day long. Jill, how are you?
Great. Thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Hey, this is episode one of eight. This is an eight-part series, and it's called Seller Called Me Back on My Offer. What do I do? Jill, you're maybe the most qualified person mm-hmm. I've ever met to do this show.
I've had one or two or a thousand of these. I don't even know.
In case listener, you live under a rock, we've completed almost 16,000 transactions, purchases and sales of property. So I think we're both a little bit qualified to answer some of these questions.
I think so.
Great show. But before we start, let's take a question from a caller.
Okay, cool. Michael from South Bend, Indiana asks, I'm interested in the psychology behind the strategy of investing in real estate nationwide. Is it practical to plan for building a nationwide network in order to capitalize on a hot market wherever that market exists in the USA? Are there any investors out there who are investing nationwide? Good question. Right? It's a long, wordy one.
What do you think? Can you paraphrase just for mostly for my sake, but maybe there's some listeners that might want to paraphrase too.
I think he's just asking, why are you looking? What's the psychology behind nationwide versus where you are? And he's saying, okay, you know, is it practical as an investor to have a nationwide, you know, market? Because it might be hot here, might be hot there, might be hard here, you know, which I get. And I think I got to tell you, I've read a little bit with this guy and done a little communication with him in other forums. He's like does not just properties. I think he does SFRs and flips all kinds of things too. So he's talking about just general investor psychology, you know, and I love it because what we do is primarily, it is nationwide. It's rare when I get something in my backyard. It's the greatest thing ever. But, you know, what do you think, Steven?
Well, I have a lot to say on this. I just gave a talk on this recently to a real estate group, not on this specific topic, but it really ties in. It really goes with our human nature when you think about real estate, to stand in front of the real estate and kind of look at it, touch it, feel it, and, you know, judge it as a piece of real estate. Mm-hmm. As investors, you have to fight that a little bit. You have to say, hey, you have to retrain yourself, your regular biology, and say, let's not look so much at the actual piece of real estate. Let's look at the transaction that's beneath it. Let's look at mm-hmm. the fact that it might be that you have an opportunity to buy it for half the price that you could actually sell it for. So that taps into, you know, you don't necessarily have to purchase. If you live in Ohio, you can do a transaction in Nevada if it's the right deal. Mm-hmm. And it goes against the psychology of doing that. It's maybe less about the psychology and more about just developing your skills and developing the way that you look at these deals as an investor over maybe the way that you would as a homeowner or just a person standing on a piece of land. So right. Do you think that answers it, or do you think that he meant something else, or am I close?
I think it does. I think you're answering it. And because I feel the same way. It's like, Maybe that's the psychology about it. The psychology is you're not looking at that asset for, oh, what a pretty door. We're going to make a lot of money on that because people are going to love the curb appeal. You could care less about that. It's really just numbers. And when you just think about the transactions based on the numbers, it's a lot easier and to do a lot more and pick the good ones and line them up. So I think that's the psychology.
So I showed this group for lack of a better description, a slide or you know, a visual on the screen that I was speaking with is a group of people that are very, they were beginning real estate investors. And I showed three houses, a house that was in great shape and looked really, really valuable. And I said, all three houses are in the immediate neighborhood of each other. A really valuable, beautiful house, a house that's kind of a little bit old, but looks nice and well taken care of. And then a dumpy one, all about the same square footage and all basically built in the same year. And I asked them which property that they would look into first. And every single one of them said the dumpy one. And so I did a slide overlay that says, well, I sent offers to all three of them. They're basically worth the same amount from a neighborhood standpoint, but the super nice one I can get for X. You know, I think I used like $98,000. The middle one I can get for 122, and the dumpy one is owned by a curmudgeon grandfather, and he wants 180,000. So now, which one do you want? And so obviously everybody said, well, I want the beautiful one for the lowest amount of money. And I saw the light bulb go off over everybody's head, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it drove my point home, and here's my point. The transaction is way more, the transaction that you're reviewing is so much more important than the property that you're reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the psychology of, you know, if you're going to buy a house that's, you know, is worth half, you can do it in another state.
Mm-hmm.
You may have to replace all the plumbing and all kinds of stuff. We can find other people to review that and look at that are probably more qualified than you are or should be as a successful real estate investor. So,
right.
I say mail away. We have tons and tons of members now who do most of their transactions out of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him.
I agree. Do you want to ask me about the question today, the topic today?
Yeah. A seller calls you back, Jill. What do you do?
Don't answer the phone. Make sure you have a good voicemail. Just kidding.
Hey, let me set this up first, okay?
Okay, yeah.
The reason that Jill's phone rings off of her hook and her staff's really what, when I say Jill's phone, I mean her staff's phone. She picks it up once in a while. I've seen it. But we send tons and tons and tons of direct mail out. And we send direct offers to property owners who are kind of showing the signs from a data standpoint that they're interested in selling their property. And the result of that is a ton of people call back and they say, heck yes, I'd love to sell you my property for the amount that you just offered. I signed it and I sent it back in the mail. Or they say, what? That's a little bit too low, that offer. I'm going to call Jill and find out what this is all about. Maybe I can get my price. And then the third type of response is what we call a little bit of anger. You know, with somebody that calls back really upset because they think that you've insulted them with a price that's, you know, they think is much, they think their property's worth a lot more than what we offered. And sometimes that's the case. Sometimes we make mistakes. But anyway, this whole 8-part series, Jill and I put it together because we were getting so many members and so many questions about, hey, what do I do with this seller that's calling me back with an XYZ scenario? So we try to lop them all into kind of like 8 scenarios. And Jill's going to describe what she does in maybe, let's say, Jill, if it's all right, those 3 basic categories. And then the episodes 7, 2 through 8, we'll get into detail on each one.
So like you want to talk about the one right now? You want me to just give an overview of what we're doing to the next? And then the first 4, so they know what's coming.
Or you could, if you'd like, there are three basic types of responses I just described. So maybe you can kind of overview how you handle those and what you do with those 3 basic responses.
Okay. Well, first of all, I took this differently than you did when we were talking about the topics. So here's my notes here. Okay. First of all, the show 1 of 8 is a seller calls back. What do I do? I'm paraphrasing here. Show 2 of 8 is a seller calls back and wants more money. Okay, we'll talk about that. Show 3 of 8 is seller mailed back the signed offer. You know, now what? And we'll talk about that. And show 4 is the seller's not and really on the same page with me, maybe unhappy or mad about my offer price. And we'll talk about that. So that gives you an idea of what we're going to do. Right now, I'm just going to dive into this. The basics, you know, the first thing is, okay, all right, let's start thinking about this. They called me back. You know, what do I do? My first thing is congratulations. You know, it worked. That's great. You know, you want to meet them from where they come. You don't spend a half hour on the phone with them, but don't be short on the phone with them either. You know, you want to thank them for calling, you know, reaching out to you and start getting the details. You know, get all the information you can about the property, which, you know, and I have a checklist that I go through.
What's on your list?
And I, by the way, I share it with my staff and our members in our program. So our cash flow from land program. So things on my list are like, I want to keep track of when the call came in. I have a date. It's really a checklist. The date they called, their name, their phone number, their email. I've got to have their contact information so I can get with them later. I want to know about the property. I want to know whose name is it in, who owns it. What's their relationship to the owner? You know, are they the ones that are they, able to sign for this, and are they the ones that really can negotiate the deal too? You don't want to waste a lot of time. It's, you know, somebody who wants to sell and the seller really doesn't want to sell. That's not going to work. I want to know where the county, I want to know the parcel number. I want to know the size if they have it. Some of the stuff I look up, but some of them have all the information right there. They might have a tax bill in front of them that they're thinking about paying, and that's why they called you too. So they have all the details there. They'll have the legal description for you. They'll have.
Well, wait a minute. I thought you made an offer on the property.
Right?
I thought you shouldn't. You know all this stuff already. If they're calling you back.
My offer might have been 5 years ago,
oh.
And I might not have that information at my fingertips. I never get into that, and they don't mind.
You know I'm being silly.
I know. If it's a, you know, if it's a new fresh one and they have a reference number, great. I can go into my database and pull it right up. Yeah. But
we send thousands and thousands and thousands of offers. All the time. We've been doing it for a long time. So when Jill's phone rings, she doesn't know exactly where it's coming from. It could be from 5 years ago. It could be in Massachusetts. It could be in Oregon. It could be 40 acres. It could be a tiny little investment type lot in Arizona. So she kind of has to find out from the seller. And believe me, the way that we send the offers out, the seller kind of assumes that you only sent an offer to them. The way we make it look through a mail merge, it looks like we just sent one offer out in our whole lifetime addressed mm-hmm. to that person specifically. So they may be, I mean, do you ever find that, Jill, that they're like, well, what do you mean you need all that information? I thought you sent me an offer.
No.
Does that ever happen?
No. Sometimes they'll say, I have a reference number. And when they start reading off the reference number, I can tell based on our sequence that it was, shucks, that was 6 years ago. And I'll just say, you know what, that one was 6 years ago. And they'll go, yeah, I know that. And I say, okay. And then we laugh about it and they give me all the information. So it's all good. So, I mean, not to mention there's things on my offer that I don't know, like what's the tax situation? You know, I may not have that in my notes right there, and you know, on a current one. So, it's all good. So, okay. So I'm trying to think what else on my checklist. Basically, all the details on the property.
What do you mean all the details?
Just what I described.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the physical details, the location, the size, the APN.
Oh, okay.
That kind of, that's what I mean, details.
I thought you meant, like, what does a property look like?
Oh, gosh, no. I don't really care because I know it's vacant land.
You know, I'm poking at you a little bit here because these are the questions that we get all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to drive a couple of points home. We're not real concerned as much about the actual physical property. I can't say that mm-hmm. enough throughout this whole series. We're so much more interested in the price. Let me give you an example. We send out, let's say we decide to send out letters for, we review the data set that we have and we take a look at all the 40 acre properties in northern Utah, or let's say just one county in Utah, and we send offers out for, we would like to buy them for $4,000 a piece. And we set that price based on a lot of stuff that we talk about in our programs, but it's low enough where if we get anything close to that, we know we're going to make money immediately. We've done all the research and we talk about that again in our program. So if one of these people calls Jill back or her staff back and she's filling this information out, there's a pretty good darn chance already, like 80% of the work's done. All they have to say is, yeah. So my point is this, it doesn't matter about the asset. The asset, we'll figure that out later, but we'll make it work 9 times out of 10 at that price point, right?
Yeah, so that's what I was going. I thought you wanted that much detail when you asked.
No,
about
I'm
it,
so glad
that's
you
why
did.
I went into it.
Oh, I'm
Okay,
so
got it.
so glad you did because, I'm glad that you did because we have many members, especially right in the first 2, 3, 4, 5 transactions that they do, that really get caught up in getting all the details and finding it. And all I'm saying is you need to know the basic stuff that Jill just described. The contact information, the size of the property, the county, the assessor's parcel number. And maybe I think, you know, Jill's a pro at using these questions to befriend the seller so that she ends up purchasing their property for the price that she wants. So you can use these questions in a really friendly type way to establish a relationship with the seller.
That's, I think, that's the one thing that you just have to learn as you go. I think I see a lot of people that start this business and they're freaked out because their phone's ringing and they feel like they should be professionals. No. It's okay to say, you know what? I'm new at this, but because the person's just so happy you're interested in their property. It's okay to say, you know, I've only been doing this for a little while or, you know, whatever. And you can make them feel comfortable and you feel comfortable. It's nothing to stress about, but I watch people stress about that.
Me too.
Oh, I should sound like a pro. I should know what I'm saying. I should rattle off a list. I'm like, no.
You know, so, that's why I want to do this series of shows. That exact reason, because it's such a popular topic, because new investors just, everybody has a thing that they kind of get hung up on. I've talked about mine when I was a beginning investor, and I think you have too, Jill. I'm not sure you had any. You really didn't have any hangups, did you? Or things, not hangups, but things you were concerned about.
No, because for me, this was an easy transition from everything else I've been doing, you know, working with people. And I'm used to talking to people about $40,000 transactions. It's not a big deal at all. Even $70,000 transactions before I got into land based on other things that I did. So I have no trouble saying, you know, that's $18,000. And what credit card would you like to put that on? Seriously. And they're like, okay, it's American Express. So, but some people are like, you know, and that's a good point that we'll talk about. I know when we get into this more is
right.
You can never assume what your buyer or seller thinks is a good deal. They might think, oh my gosh, I just stole that from them. And you're like, yay, about the sales price too. You don't know what they were thinking and you can't assume. So where I see people getting tripped up on it is they feel like they're embarrassed to ask for too little or, you know, You know what? Don't be, you know, make it a fair offer. Let them tell you, you know, would you do this?
Yeah,
that happens to me all the time.
You know what,
Jill, you said 900. Is there any way we could make it 1,000? Oh gosh, how easy is that for me to say, yeah, it's $100. Done. They feel like they won. Piece of cake.
You know what I see? It's not so much a trip up on negotiation, but what I see is people just really, really legitimately concerned or afraid about making mistakes because it's their first few deals and they just don't have that transaction experience under their belt. And you said it earlier, man, all you got to do is say, hey, seller, this is my, you ever have a waiter just come up to you and say, hey, you're my first table I've ever waited on. And I say, congratulations, because I'm going to be the best customer you've ever waited on. And everybody just kind of takes a big, deep breath and it's fine. But I love when they, instead of just being freaked out, they disclose that right up front. And then it disarms everybody.
Well, I have a trick for that too,
yeah.
By the way.
That's what this podcast is all about. Tricks.
I have a trick and a tip. If you get all the information, tell them you'll call them back. Take a break. If you get a little tripped up and you're not sure you got all the right information, you know, here's what I want you to do. You know, like I was giving you the list, the third and final thing when they call you back is explain how the process works and tell them what you're going to do next and how the transaction is going to unfold. And we'll get more into that in another call, another part of the series. But my point is, it's okay it's okay. If you're not comfortable, don't make an offer right then. One of the questions you're going to ask them is, how much are you asking? And if they say $5,000, You don't, you're not under the gun to go, oh, shoot, is that good? Do I take it? Is that not good? Don't make the decision right then. You're not comfortable. That's okay. Sometimes it's even better to sit, think about it, do your homework. I mean, not just for you, but for the seller, by the way. There's a little bit of psychology that goes on for the seller when you say, you know what? Thank you. I appreciate you letting me know what your asking price is. I'm going to do my homework and I'll get back to you and hang up. And by the way, oh gosh, I forgot to ask, call them right back. Big deal. Don't spend an hour looking for something because you forgot to ask the county. You got everything you want. Oh my God, I don't even know what county that is. I got this parcel number. I'm not going to go searching all the counties. I think it's California. No. Call them right back and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't jot this down. What county was that again? Oh, Kern. Okay, thank you. Bye. Hang up, you know, whatever. So then do your homework and take your time and then go from there.
Here's the takeaway. Mm-hmm. You can't make a mistake.
Right.
You really can't. I mean, that person owns one or two or maybe a few pieces, a handful of pieces of property, chances are they know a lot less about it than you do. It's not like you're buying their house that they live in every day. You know, they're calling you back because they kind of want to get rid of it. You're not sending them a top and top price offer. So there's mm-hmm. you can't make a mistake. That's really what I want to leave the listeners with, so the new investor listeners with.
Create your checklist too, and it's ever evolving. We laugh about this because remember what, for me, I made sure it was like a highlighted bold part of my checklist for me and my staff, which is, do you have any other property? And I learned that as I went along. Boy, I need to be asking that because these guys have other properties available. So as you go along, you'll realize I always forget to ask that one. I got to make sure I have that on my checklist. So don't try to memorize this. It's okay to go through your steps and you won't forget anything. And you'll get better and better as you go along.
Exactly. You know, part of what we offer at Land Academy and part of our land company's family is a website called successplant.com. And if you don't have a checklist and you'd like to see other people's checklists, our checklist or some of our other members, please go on to successplant.com and just go on there and say, hey, I'm new. I listen to the podcast and I'd love to see your checklist for your acquisition checklist. Everybody, they'll swarm to help you out. It's a real positive community. Join us in another episode where Jill and I discuss your all-important success in property investment and in life. Jill, that was super helpful. Thank you.
Welcome. I like talking about this stuff. This is the bread and butter of all this.
I designed this series for you because I just think it's right up your alley.
Uh-huh.
Think it's funny. It's funny how stuff in life is so simple to people, certain people, and just so confusing, and it's all experience and confidence based, you know.
It is.
Like how many deals?
There once.
How many deals do you think the normal person who gets involved in this? I mean, how many sellers do you think it takes to talk to before you really start to establish, a sense of confidence, and you just don't worry about it anymore, or you aren't concerned about it anymore?
Well, the nice thing is when you're new at this. When you're getting your first call back, you know exactly what it is and where it's coming from. You know them when the phone rings, they're all the 5-acre properties in this area because that's the only thing I sent letters out to.
Oh, right.
So you kind of got that out of the way. You kind of already know all that. Now you're just trying to find out, did you like, and you know what you offered and you know why. So you're really finding out, did you like my offer? Do we need to talk about it? And by the way, what's the deal here? Is a seller alive and, you know, all that stuff, you know, how can we get this done? So, but how many does it take? Oh gosh, five, a handful.
That's what I think.
You know what? A handful, you got this, 20 and you're a pro.
And maybe even just that first one to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Practice with your kids. So, have your wife call, that kind of thing.
It is kind of silly, but in a lot of companies, that's called role playing, where you're like, okay, I'm going to be the seller, you're going to be the buyer, I'm going to call you. You know what, Steven, you and I did this. You mm-hmm. know, this is funny. Remember on a podcast show, like, well, I don't know if it was, I don't know how far back it was, but it was kind of funny. We were doing a role play and you were the seller and I was the me, And you were like throwing me into the bus, though. You're like,
yeah,
it was hilarious. You're being a stinker. And I had to warn everybody. It doesn't always, it doesn't go like that. It rarely goes like that.
You know what we should do? We should do a little role play right at the end here on each of the episodes.
All right.
Give somebody to give someone, you know, give everybody a, something to look forward to. Like if you sit through the pain of this episode the end,
you'll get something funny.
Yeah.
Do you want to do one right now?
Yeah, sure. Which one do you want to
do? You know what? I'm going to be the seller.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Hold on. Let me get my head straight.
Tell me when you're ready.
Go ahead. You make the phone ring sound and I'll answer.
Okay. Ring, ring.
Hello. This is Land Company. Steve speaking.
Hi. My name is Agnes and I found a letter in my dad's file from, boy, was it dusty. Whew. I could, and by the way, I can't even tell this guy's signature. I don't know where it was. It needs to take a writing test. But anyway, my dad had this old file and I didn't even know he had a property. Do you want to buy it?
Yes, Agnes, before we get started, I have a few questions for you, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
What are you wearing today?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm still in my dressing gown and my zebra slippers. Does that make a difference on the price?
Mm-hmm.
Offer price?
I'm writing this down. Thank you. One second, please. And what? How old are you?
Oh, honey, I'm much older than I sound. I'm 83.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
I'm a retired school teacher. Do you want to know about that?
Agnes, I'm writing all this down. Thank you for being so patient.
You know, I have 6 kids and 23 grandkids and 41 great-grandkids.
Thank you.
And they, by the way, I have to divide this equally among them all. Did you write all that down? Because I often forget. Oh, wait. We have one on the way. You might want to make a note of that.
You know, with those numbers, someone just got pregnant too.
Right.
Just while
Not
we were talking.
Me.
Anyway, back to this transaction. Do you, in your shoe collection, do you have a pair of shoes that you've never that you only wear specifically in your bedroom, all among all the other shoes that you wear throughout normal life?
Oh, honey. Any woman that's good in the best bedroom always has a pair of bedroom shoes.
I can't ever air this.
Is there anything else, or do you want to talk about the? I don't really care. Do you want to see me in my bedroom shoes standing on the property?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Please take a picture of that.
Well, you know, at 81, I'm still quite a looker. I got to tell you.
This isn't going to help anybody. It's helping me, though, Joe.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
It's making me feel better already.
Good. It's going to be one of our longest shows we've done in a long time.
Oh, should we really do the call for real or not?
No, all let's right. wrap it up. I think they got it.
All right. In the next episode, we will do a call that is more serious than this and about how to do sellers. On that note, let's go buy some property.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com.
If you want to get involved or you need more information about our profitable, niche real estate operation, call 480-467-0359. You just might get Jill at the other end of the line.
LandAcademy.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.